Welcome to Native Yoga Toddcast. So happy you are here. My goal with this channel is to bring inspirational speakers to the mic in the field of yoga, massage, body work, and beyond. Follow us at Native Yoga and check us out at nativeyogacenter.com. All right, let's begin. Welcome to Native Yoga Toddcast. For those of you that are here for the first time, welcome. I'm so happy to have you join in. For those of you that are longtime listeners, your support is so appreciated. I am really delighted to bring to the podcast today Dr. Rose Erin Vaughn. She is an experienced acupuncturist. She's a yoga teacher. She specializes in myofascial trigger point therapy and the practice of science of meridians. She has over 20 years of practice in the field, and she's got an incredible Instagram page. I really highly recommend you guys go check it out. It's at Erin_bodyaware. And then please go look her up on her website, which is scienceofself.com. I recently bought her book, The Science of Self, Yoga Pathways, Organs, and Emotions, off of Amazon. I'll put a link in the description below for all these different sites. And it's really interesting. And I have to admit, I've been reading it and applying some of the ideas during my own yoga practice. And the way that she's been able to bring the use of visualization of the meridians into while practicing the yoga poses and feeling the energy pathways in the body based on our experience, and then having a little bit of guidance from her to know what the tradition of it all is, has been really fascinating. So for me, this is a huge honor to bring Dr. Rose Erin Vaughn on. Let's go ahead and start. I'm so excited to have Dr. Rose Erin Vaughn here today. And Dr. Rose Erin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm sitting by my wood stove up in upstate New York.
Oh, wow. It's obviously a little bit colder up there than here in Florida. I'm in my flip-flops and I have the air conditioning on.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Right?
No, it's very cold here. Yeah.
Oh man, I am really excited to have this chance to speak with you because I have your book, The Science of Self, Yoga Pathways, Organs, and Emotions, and I'm enamored with it. I think what you've done with blending your acupuncture career with the yoga together and the visuals of the way that you use the meridian lines from the acupuncture and or Chinese medicine system in with the yoga poses has been so interesting. I really love your book. I think it's incredible.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And so that all of our listeners are aware, you're an experienced acupuncturist, you're a yoga teacher. You specialize in myofascial trigger point therapy and practice science of meridians. And you've had an opportunity to learn from your 20 years of practice in the field. And I'm curious, was there a light bulb moment for you, that your study and career path would unfold to where you are now?
There was a few, but I think as far as combining the energy pathways, which we call meridians in Chinese medicine, with yoga, because those are two different systems.
Yeah.
That happened for me. I think that was something that was sort of, it sort of was a seed for a long time, you know, a seed and then it sprouts and then it grows. And I think when I was studying originally just trigger point manual therapy and yoga before I went to acupuncture school and learned the meridian system, I sensed there is some deeper connection that I needed to find with combining sort of the myofascial pathways that I was learning with the asana, yoga asana, and then understanding sort of the emotional connection to it. Like why are these patterns in the body And why does yoga asana work to not only heal the body, but to release emotions? Anyone that practices asana knows that it releases emotions.
Yes.
Because you start crying in class sometimes and then you feel better.
Yes.
And so I had asked my teacher, who is Dharma Mitra, my yoga teacher. He's a master. I mean, he's 83 now. And I was pretty close to him. And I said, I want to learn the energy pathways. And he's a funny guy. I mean, he will say things like really short, you know, and then later you'll figure out what it meant. But he just said, well, you need to get a book. He was like, I don't know. He was like, I don't know that stuff, but you should get a book. He said, he told me to get the Shivananda book that has like the nadis in it. And I was like, oh, well, I guess that was a stupid question. And, but I think he, you know, like mysteriously, he sort of put me on the path to go to acupuncture school and learn those pathways.
Nice.
And every time I see him, he's always like, are you still doing the needles? You know, acupuncture. And he asked me while I was in school, and he asked me just last week, are you still doing the needles? And anyway, I think as I studied the meridian system, which is really overwhelming in the beginning.
Yes.
It's a massive amount of very detailed information about the energy pathways in the body. And so it was overwhelming. So I made up these meditations, which I could do. And, during the asana, like body scans.
Where you would just follow the meridian, like where you'd use like your, I guess I was going to say the word imagination, but you use your power of visualization to body scan and follow the meridian around while you're in the yoga pose.
Exactly.
That's a cool idea.
It is the imagination.
Yeah.
Because my acupuncture teacher is also a master, and he's like, it doesn't matter if these pathways are real or not.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like people argue over these things.
Yeah.
Like, are they useful? And so they are useful. And anyway, yes, it's totally imagination, visualization. And as I was doing the asana that I'd been doing for years anyway, I was like, wow, I can feel these pathways.
Wow.
They're on some level, they're really real. And it just unfolded. It opened a whole new world.
Did that light bulb go off more when you started to apply what you were learning from the Chinese meridian system more so than what you had learned and applied from the myofascial release pressure point work?
Well, the thing about the myofascial release, which is brilliant, and I had studied the Travell Simmons text. And you know, I went to massage school first.
That's a very dense text, isn't it? Like I have those books.
Oh, yeah.
Like to say I studied that, like that's a very big undertaking just for those that are listening that aren't familiar with those texts. So that's pretty amazing that you combed those volumes and went deep
exactly.
into that study.
You have to comb through it. And I have I still have the original books that I had bought, and they're, you know, heavily underlined because I was just like, wow, what is this? This is crazy.
Yeah.
Like I tell everyone to buy those and just spend the rest of their life reading them.
They're absolutely incredible in relation to trigger point and referral points. Don't you think like the, just the
referral and also like, things that it could mimic or that could mimic those pain patterns.
Mm.
Like, you know, you may think you're having a heart attack, but you actually have a trigger point in your rhomboid or something like that, or your pec major.
Yes.
And so that was just fascinating to me, but it had left out one component mostly, which was, emotions like stress and anxiety and, you know, or anger, like how do those things specifically what patterns do they specifically create? And that is what the Chinese system is masterful for, because they understand the connection of those myofascial pathways to organs, to the specific organs, internal organs. And also, like, something which when you first hear it, you're like, what? The liver is, it has anger, is, you know, is yeah. associated with anger. Like,
yeah.
really? Like, how? I don't, you know, people don't buy it right away, but I explain it to people, like, you know, the heart is related to love, right?
Yeah.
Everyone just sort of intuitively knows that because yeah. they feel it.
Yeah. That's a good point. That's one that we just accept. So we accept that one, but the thought of anger in my liver, like, yeah, it's a bit of a leap at first.
It is. You know, and but then each of the, but then if you start to study it and think about it, then and then you notice, like, when you get really angry or there's something that's really irritating you that's not usually there, you notice certain patterns in your body, like tension around the right side of the rib cage.
Yeah.
Radiating down the right thigh or yeah. down the IT band or something, or up into your jaw. And that's the liver and gallbladder. I mean, it's the gallbladder pathway, but it's related to the liver. And then it changes your life. You can't go back once you see it.
Good point. I have a lot of questions based on what you just said, but I also want to bring up that you hold a bachelor's in biology from Wake Forest University and that you graduated top of your class. Is that true?
That is true. And, no, and, not the top. I was like magna cum laude or something.
Pretty close to it, right? And yeah. and you're a doctor of acupuncture from Pacific College of Health Sciences.
Right.
I'm curious, how have you taken your study in biology and use that to help you with your acupuncture study and or vice versa?
Well, I mean, for me, biology was like just a passion. It's like an art form. I mean, it's an appreciation of what is there, which is exactly the same as studying the meridians.
Yeah.
It's a little different because of the tools that you use to study it. But it's a fascination and an awe with life.
Yeah.
How, like, what are cells? Cause I was studying cell biology and you can't even see a cell without a microscope. So I was studying microscopes too, but it's just a miracle when you realize. And I study anatomy also, you know, physical anatomy in depth. And the more you study all of those subjects, it just blows your mind. So I'm glad I have a background in science because I think it helps me analyze things more thoroughly, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, logically, yeah. just think about things.
That makes sense. I have had a chance to study with Dharma Mitra. He was teaching down here in Fort Lauderdale at a Yoga Journal conference, and he did say and do so many different things that I was just like, this guy is amazing. You know, like he's really an interesting character. And I remember at one point he was quoting the Bhagavad Gita, but at the time, maybe I didn't know that it was the Bhagavad Gita. So he had said a few things around the realm of, I am God, and I am a manifestation of God. I am God. And at the time, it really blew me away because I guess maybe I didn't realize he could have been quoting the Bhagavad Gita. Maybe he wasn't. And at that point, I was in this realm of thinking, is that an ego thing to say I am God? And then after I got more steeped in India philosophy and started to understand the concept of appreciating that everything is God. So if I recognize that I am, then there's that element. And so I'm obviously that comes from a lineage of definitely believing in God. And so I'm curious that where, if you have had a deep background in the science world, which often doesn't go down that path, where or how do you balance the opposing forces, or do you see them as opposing forces? Do you feel like science and belief in God is really connected? What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, that's a really good question. And I first of all, I think he is quoting the Bhagavad Gita.
It was afterward that I was like, oh, he was reading from the, he was quoting Bhagavad Gita. Well, that makes sense.
He was reading
out. Krishna is saying, I am God. And, but at the moment I was like, whoa, right. Dharmamitra is really going out there right now. Like, so thank you for shedding a little light on that.
But I think, you know, I personally was always very more than science. I was into God, just figuring it out. Not like I was deep into one specific religion, although I was and am Christian since I was born, I guess.
Yep.
Whenever that starts.
Yep.
And I was raised that way anyway.
Yeah.
And but I wanted to explore everything, so I read all the different ones, and I used to annoy my parents, you know, about like, why is no one talking about this? Like, who is God?
Yes.
What are we doing here? Why are we here? And they would be like, nobody cares. Stop talking. And so, but then when I studied science, it really never was a conflict for me, because, and I had some amazing teachers. I went to Wake Forest, which is actually a Baptist school. It was originally, I think it's kind of mellowed out now, but, you know, my teachers, I can think of two now who, really inspired me. And they, one of them was a biochemistry teacher. And she was like, the more you study biochemistry, the more you believe in God, because there is no way that this is random. It's impossible. I mean, I studied evolution, I studied genetics. We had to sort of study all of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And we studied immunology. Immunology is, if you study one science subject in depth enough, it will lead you to God, whether it's physics or biology or chemistry, because you will realize that we cannot comprehend how this got here.
Yeah. Yeah.
We can't even really understand how it works. We're just beginning to understand how DNA and the immune system works. I mean, that should be obvious to everyone now. as advanced, we have a MacBook Pro and we can talk to each other from very far away, but we don't know how the immune system really works, or we would be able to cure all diseases.
Yeah.
Good point. Because there's another component, and that's the spirit, and it's the will to live. And where does that come from?
Great question.
And the intelligence of the immune system is mind blowing on its own. Not with help from the outside. I mean, that was the one topic that really blew my mind.
Immunity?
The immune system, because I don't want to bore your audience with the details, but the way that the body can edit your DNA and all this stuff, it seems like it's being, you know, there's an intelligence behind it that's beyond just what it looks like.
I agree. And I don't think there's any way you're going to be able to bore us, Aaron, because you've got a lot of great, fascinating insights. So thank you for saying that, but I don't think that's possible here. That, That's really cool. It seems like you've been able to, yeah, develop grand appreciation for both ways of inspecting energy and or the universe. I'm curious, one question I've always had about the meridians is, if I imagine, say, so if this comes from China, at some, you know, somebody is ill, they go to the Chinese, the acupuncture and or Chinese medicine physician, doctor, and how did they figure these meridians out? Do you think it was a process of deep meditation combined with, let's just put either pressure via thumb or finger, hand, and or a needle, and then sit real deep in meditation and see where that pressure tends to send feeling and or awareness most consistently across the most a large test group? Or do you believe in the, like, kind of it just came in a flash, in a vision, in a, you know, like there was one, you know, like prophet or somebody that, like, look, you guys, here's the meridians. I figured it out. Do you have any sense, or have you come across that in your studies?
Yeah, I think there were probably some great masters that really propelled it forward. But my understanding and is that we can all reinvent it with just by examining our own bodies.
That's cool.
And so it's I say, like, our body is the book that we have to study.
Yeah.
It's written inside of us. And yes, I think people had to sit and meditate. I mean, they were yogis. Or what we would call yogis, because they were using those pathways as spiritual, you know, alchemical practices or spiritual practices. And so I think they were studying that within themselves.
Mm.
I mean, people were less distracted by all this external.
Yeah.
You know, there's just a lot of interesting things to look at really fast right now on social media and TV and all, whatever. But I think maybe people didn't even have electricity.
Yeah.
So that it was like at night, it was you and your internal world. You close your eyes and you have to lay there and feel what's happening.
Yeah,
and
good
the movements inside the body.
Good point.
Probably they were experimenting on themselves and on patients.
Yep.
And yeah, I imagine that's exactly what you said is how it was. And that it you know, because it developed in many branches. Maybe there was an original prophet. I don't know.
In relation to, like, the first time I took a yoga class, there's yoga. Like, it's yoga. So you go in, but then I had no idea there was, like, this style, that style, this teacher associated with this specific style. And then you start, you know, but that first yoga class was like, it's just yoga. Like, it's all yoga. So obviously everything's like that probably. So in the Chinese medicine world, there's a whole bunch of different schools of Chinese medicine. Is that correct?
For sure. Yeah. At least as many as there are for yoga.
Got it.
And people that fully disagree with each other. Like masters that everyone bows to, that completely disagree about where the pathways points are, what they're used for, how to do it, what kind of needle, you know, there's many, many ways to go.
How do you rise above that dogma? Have you been entrenched in Chinese medicine dogma and have to reinvent yourself, so to speak, throughout the years, or has that been really easy for you?
Well, the thing is, my teacher, I adhere to my main teacher, who was Dr. Mark Seam. Now, he's pretty radical, and probably a lot of people don't agree with his style, but if you read his books, I mean, I read his book before I ever met him, and they made me cry because I was like, this is it.
Wow.
This is real.
Yep.
And he's American, and he was one of the first Americans to have an opinion, you know, to have the courage to have an opinion about Chinese medicine, you know. So
good point.
And he was also working directly with Janet Travell, who was, you know, one of the authors of the myofascial.
Yes.
Travell Simmons. What is it called? Myofascial pain and dysfunction.
I think you're right.
And so he was working with her.
Oh, that's cool.
And studying trigger points. I mean, he already owned a school at that time, and she came, and they sort of worked together to develop and explore, the similarities of dry needling for trigger points and traditional Chinese acupuncture, which is, I mean, he was very political also. So he would always, and I don't know how much of this is fully accurate, but he would go on and on about how, you know, Chinese medicine was ruined, you know, during the communist revolution because they took all of the spirituality out of it and systematized in a way that it could sort of be taught to the world.
Interesting.
And yeah, so he didn't buy any of that stuff. He said, look, you have to memorize all this stuff to pass the board exam. But then that's not how you really do it. The way you really do acupuncture is very similar to body work. You have to feel the myofascial pathways and see where they're stuck. And then you use the needle like a massage tool, kind of, to release myofascial blockages or sort of, you know, the connective tissue can get sort of kinked up. I don't know why, maybe because of strain, but also because there's no other way to explain it than chi flow or the flow of energy, subtle energy. So it was a much more, and his book is called Acupuncture Physical Medicine.
Cool. I'll check that out.
That's one of them.
Acupuncture.
Yeah, you would love it. You would love it.
Physical medicine. Thank you. You're the founder of Science of Self Yoga and Meridian Yoga Therapy, and you've written 4 books. I already made mention of the one that I have. I'll get your other ones, I promise. I have not finished, to be honest. I have not finished this one because there's a lot of information in this book. I haven't studied them. I haven't studied Chinese meridians, and I've gotten acupuncture a lot, and I've heard these terms like triple heater and, I've heard about the anger associated with liver and like the real basic things. But as I found when I was reading your book, in a moment, I'll ask you a question about the triple heater, cause I really like the way that you explained it in your book. But can you explain now the premise of the book and the message that you aim to convey through it?
Oh, I was just, that was my first book, and I was just so excited about how to put everything together, you know.
Yeah.
Yoga and Chinese. I was like, wow, oh my God, this is wild. Like, the more I studied it and researched and within my own practice, and I was like, this is incredible. It like, it all lines up.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to put it out there. And, but you know, also I think because a lot of times yoga is very externally focused. Also, not all yoga, obviously, but just kind of the general trend is more external or real physical anatomy based, like,
yeah,
you know, Western anatomy. And I think by putting them together and learning the energy pathways, I wanted to help people go deeper in their yoga practice.
Well,
and look more inside and start to think about what kind of thoughts and feelings they have that are arising during the practice that might be arising because of the practice. Specific poses,
yeah,
for example, could, yeah, bring up specific types of emotions. So just to look deeper.
Yeah. I think you achieved your goal because I since I've been reading it, when I come in into my practice, I have appreciation for the subtlety and the inner environment, but with looking at the pictures with the lines and then actually thinking about the lines while I'm practicing has, mm-hmm. it's a really amazing experience because it completely shifts the focus. And I don't know, maybe I'm thinking like, oh, I wonder if I'm doing my pose good enough. And like, you know, is it deep enough or do I, you know, mm-hmm. that type of thing where, like you said, very externally mm-hmm. focused. And so to start to visualize the energy lines and or feel where there's the most amount or least amount of sensation in each pose, I was like, whoa, that's a really amazing concept.
mm-hmm.
It's cool. I can see how you were like,
yeah, the pictures help, right?
The pictures are unbelievable. Like when I first found you on Instagram, I love the way that you put the lines on there. I don't know if you want to, maybe you don't want to give away your trade secret, and I completely understand, but how do you do that? How are you getting the lines?
Photoshop?
And yeah. Do you do that or do you have someone do it for you?
I had somebody do the ones that are in the book were done by yep. someone else.
Yeah.
Now I do my own.
Very cool.
I had one girl that helped me with it in the beginning, but yeah. I had done some Photoshop stuff before. So,
okay.
It's not an app.
Okay.
So yeah. Photoshop.
I was going to say that looks a little more complicated than a $2.99 app. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is why I really hope that everybody listening goes and checks out your Instagram will be maybe the easiest way and or your website, but it's so cool. So then to get a little bit deeper in on the meridian, and I want to keep this simple so that those for myself as well as our listeners. So I hope this question isn't too hard to answer, but can you explain the brilliance behind the 12 regular meridians? And then I saw that you mentioned the 8 extraordinary channels and like, what are some of their unique characteristics? Is that something you can even tackle in a 1-hour podcast? Yeah. All right, cool.
Of course. So the 12 regular meridians deal with physiological processes. Of course, this is an oversimplification, but physiological processes and emotions, and they form a circuit. So there's 12, and they're named after the organs that you would recognize, like the heart, the small intestine, the lung, large intestine, etc. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the energy, they form a circuit, like I said, in a specific order, and they all connect. You know, so it's one energy moving through these 12, this 12 parts of a circuit.
Mm.
And those pathways don't exist until you take your first breath when you're born. So it's closely related to the diaphragm and the movement of the breath that's moving the subtle energy through the body. And just, you know, the functioning of the body, like digestion and but also thinking and feeling, and, you know, eliminating, breathing, reproduction.
That's fascinating.
Although that's also,
it happens when you breathe. It's not something in utero.
Yeah, they don't exist. Those 12 regular ones don't exist until you take your first breath.
Huh. That's cool.
Which I found really helped me understand the importance of the diaphragm.
That's interesting.
Right. It is, because it has everything to do with stress and the diaphragm is a very interesting kind of semi-unconscious muscle
that
we can learn to control.
I don't want to interrupt your train of thought, but when you said there's like 12 tracks, if I envision like, say, like a racetrack where there's like a circle, a loop, and then like if there's 12 separate loops, do they all intersect at like a single point, or is it that they're all just crisscrossing each other? You know what I mean?
They're crisscrossing, overlapping, but so the 12 regular meridians, they all connect to the organs, and then they either go into the fingers or the toes, like a specific finger or toe.
All right.
But like, okay, let's say the energy starts in your solar plexus. This is where the circuit starts.
Yeah.
And then it goes through the lungs, and then it goes into your thumbs. And then it goes into your index finger, and then it goes up to your face, and then it goes down to your second toe. I mean, those, I just named three different pathways.
Got it.
Right there. So it alternates, it just zigzags, crisscrosses all over the body, carrying energy.
Yep.
Right. So that's the 12. And you asked me about the 8.
I did.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
And so those are different, and they do not form a circuit. They all flow upwards, with the exception of the belt vessel, which goes horizontal. And they sort of, a lot of them start in the pelvic floor and go up, similar to the nadis, the three central channels in yoga.
Interesting.
But they are there before you're born.
Huh.
Yeah.
What do you think the significance is of that is, that there's these ones before you're born, and then all of a sudden these 12 kick in once you start breathing?
I'm trying to figure that out.
All right. Good answer.
Like, it's just a journey for me, because it's really easy for me to understand the 12 regular ones, because, you know, as a doctor of acupuncture treating patients, they have ordinary problems.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they want their digestion to be better, or their back pain, or they need to be able to sleep better. And so I'm thinking about those physiological processes in the myofascial pathway. And that's easy. It's harder for me to really fully grasp the extraordinary vessels.
Mm.
And I have mainly focused my interest on the three that are very similar to the nadis of the yoga, you know. The Sushumna, Ida, and Pingala are the sun, moon channel, and the central channel.
Yeah.
So there's three out of the 8 extraordinary vessels are very similar to those. They run up the center. And I've really focused on trying to understand those and how they can be used in deeper meditation and spiritual practice.
Interesting. Is there any correlation and or similarity between prana and apana? So prana up movement and apana down movement, in relation to that you said the 8 extraordinary, 7 of them are all going up. Do you think there's no downward one? Is that interesting? That seems a little interesting. But maybe it doesn't.
I know.
Maybe the 12 take care of that, because it's pulling it. It's pulling it
they
down
do.
To your toes, like, and to your fingers. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, because a prana and apana are sort of physiological energies.
Mm.
I mean, if you're talking about, like illumination, and I'm not really good at Ayurvedic stuff, but that would be kind of like the spleen, which is a lifting energy, and then the stomach, which is a downward energy, for example.
Got it.
There are certain energies that rise up and that go down, but those are not so much related to the extraordinary vessels that I know of. I mean, like I said, I'm not a master of the 8 extraordinary.
Well, great point. I mean, I hear you. I think it. Do you think there? You have a whole lifetime to practice and study. I always kind of think I'll always be practicing and studying. I've kind of I guess there's a nice ideal about mastering something, but it almost seems like it's, like you said, there in terms of when we study science and realize that we don't really know much. Like we don't, like I kind of, I'm okay now thinking that I won't ever really know everything. Maybe until I pass away. I don't know. But while I'm alive, I think that's a really good answer, probably, to always be like a really receptive student, or like a really open student, always curious, always wanting to study, always trying to figure it out. Yeah. Well, that's really,
if you think you figured it out, you're probably wrong. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah. Yes.
Especially with something so mysterious as these pathways that you can't see, and they were there before you were born. You know what I mean? Like, how are you really going to figure that all out?
Yeah.
In a way that you could explain it too.
Good
in
point.
Words.
Good point. I know that you.
But I haven't.
I hear you. I hear you. I saw that you offer a lot of trainings, like teacher trainings and different types of trainings. Can you talk about, like, I saw it, I think today on Instagram, you posted some graduates of a recent training that you held. Can you explain a little bit what you're trying to teach these students? Are these yoga students or are these acupuncture students or both that are coming to study and practice with you?
Well, we have different intensives, and so some of them are really more in traditional yoga, where we study the traditional yoga texts like the Hatha Pradipika and the Yoga Sutras. And I mean, we always use a little bit of the meridians because it's just so helpful. But some of the trainings, like the meridian yoga therapy stuff, is more about a more therapeutic style of yoga and also acupressure. I mean, we're teaching acupressure techniques. How to release, my favorite one is the diaphragm release and the abdominal massage, you know, getting into the abdominal points and organs, abdominal diagnosis, and using the spinal points diagnostically. But we learn a lot of techniques that are healing on all levels, healing and releasing stuck emotions and breathing and all of that. My favorite thing about those trainings is getting people, if it's in person, is getting people to do hands-on work who've never done it.
Yeah, that's cool.
And to realize that they can do it. It's right. That's what we were made to do.
Yeah.
You don't have to be special. You don't have to know very much. You just have to learn how to feel.
Can you explain?
And pay attention.
It sounds like, good point. To feel and pay attention. How do you teach people how to feel and pay attention? Do you have a methodology to going about? Because it sounds simple, but it's, I think to teach someone to feel, I guess my first thought was meaning like teach someone how to put their hand, say, on someone's abdomen and feel. So yeah. There's the first level of like feeling the surface, the skin. But I'm guessing with the training you've had, your palpation skill can get a little more fine-tuned to where maybe like what can you feel when you palpate someone's abdomen? What type of things are you able to pick up on?
I mean, I tell people, look, I can tell you what you're supposed to look for, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you touch 1,000 people's abdomens, then you'll know what an abdomen normally feels like.
Yeah.
And what an abdomen that's tight in the upper right quadrant or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you will know an abdomen that has like liver or stomach or large intestine, you'll just know, or kidney.
Yeah.
But you have to touch 1,000 people and look at the rest of their complaints. They come in with a headache, right? There's 1,000 different kinds of headaches, but that's one piece of information.
Oh, wow.
You listen to the sound of their voice. You look at their skin tone, sort of how they sit, you know, their body language and stuff, and you touch their abdomen. And then that's one piece of data, all of that that you add to your brain, you know, and after you've done that 1,000 times or 10,000 times, I don't know, a lot,
yes.
Not 10 times, you know, but like in 10 years later,
yes. Yes.
That's how you learn it. Yes. No one can teach you that. You have to just do it. It's like yoga. It's exactly like yoga. Yeah. Dharma Mitra can tell you to sit there and close your eyes and look at your space between your eyebrows, but until you do it for 10, 20 years, you're not going to know why.
Yeah.
Or you're not going to know what's there until you just do it.
Great point.
So I just tell people, I mean, the main thing is to get people to feel like it's okay to do that. Like you can,
yeah,
in a safe space with consent, you can work on each other. Say, I'm going to press in your abdomen and you're going to breathe into your abdomen while I'm pressing on it. And we're going to see what happens. You're going to tell me what you feel and I'm going to tell you what I feel. And that's it.
Wow.
That's profound.
That is.
Because nobody takes the opportunity to do that, really. Not nobody, but you know.
I know what you mean.
It's not a normal thing to do.
That's a great point, Dr. Rose. That's cool. Just bringing it down, just pulling it down a couple notches.
Okay.
Hey, you guys, let's just chill for a minute. I want you to feel abdomens and just talk about it and see what you notice. So then I'm guessing this is a pretty deep technique though, because obviously I know from my Thai massage training in Thailand, they really put so much emphasis on the abdomen and they would do some very deep abdominal massage work to the point where I had moments where I thought, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it through this experience. Mm-hmm. Afterward, I'd feel so good. But during, it's so intense. Talk about emotions coming up. And I know like in classic Western massage world, like if we go for like good old fashioned Swedish massage training, you know, they'll show us how to, you know, move the drape so the chest is covered, move the drape so the, you know, the just the abdomen is showing, and then, you know, do some classic effleurage techniques on the abdomen and you're done. And then you go work in the spa and you're like, that's so much work to move the drape around, you know, like maybe I'll just skip the stomach. And then
no one does it.
A lot of people are like, you know, also like, I'm really self-conscious about my stomach. So I don't know that I want you touching my stomach. And it's a sensitive area for a lot of people. And, but it's so amazing. So I'd love to hear even a little bit more what you've learned over the years facilitating these type of experiences with people, what type of reactions you've seen and maybe how people have benefited from this.
Well, I mean, I'm lucky because I work with people that do a lot of yoga and take care of themselves.
Yep.
For one thing, most people that are studying that stuff do, but I say that because I've worked with people in other circumstances who don't take care of themselves. I mean, I worked in a harm reduction center where people are actively using drugs and you cannot do abdominal massage.
Yeah.
Because there's too much disease and toxicity, even on a gross physical level.
Yeah.
Not to mention emotional trauma.
Yep.
So part of doing abdominal massage is that you're going to work with people who already stretched and breathed and ate a fairly healthy diet and drank some water. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
They have a basic awareness and interest in healing. And they may have, people, you're right. People are like a little funny about the abdomen, but part of it also is the confidence of the practitioner.
Yep.
You know, if I, as a practitioner, am worried about my own abdomen and I can't, and I haven't dealt with my own, then it's going to be hard for me to work on somebody else and make them feel safe.
That's a good point.
And, or make them just not, it is safe, but it's also just make them feel like this is normal. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm just going to press on these points. This is normal. This is not, unusual at all. Like, I do this all the time. And you don't say it with words, but you say it with your hands. And, I think the abdominal massage to me is the navel. You just, there's a few things. It's like the diaphragm, the navel, the armpits. Mm. And you can't do that on somebody immediately.
Good point.
So we work in the hands and the feet, and then we work in toward the center. But if somebody's done 2 hours of asana and an hour of pranayama right before, then you can go right into it.
Mm.
You can work on the navel, the diaphragm, and the armpits, and you're done. And it's profound.
Can you? That sounds awesome. I want to come take a training with you, with your group. It sounds amazing. I am going. I will. Can you talk a little bit about the armpit? Because that isn't an area that I really focus in on with people. Can you explain what your thoughts are there with that? Yeah.
So the armpit in terms of meridians is the heart meridian, and which is not what you would guess. And it's probably long too, in terms of the pec minor being kind of up in there on the front side. And it's also the rotator cuff, because you have the subscapularis muscle, which is the hidden part of the rotator cuff. And it's also the part that tends to be overdeveloped and tight compared to the other parts of the rotator cuff, which are usually kind of stringy. Not on everybody, but typically. It's a very intimate place, and it tends to be ticklish for some reason, which I think is probably a defense mechanism. And when I work, if somebody tells me they have a shoulder problem, I know if they will let me go in their armpit, I can at least change it. I can make it a little bit better, if not completely eliminate it.
When you're saying armpit, are you mentioning like coming in and around from the lateral border of the scapula and trying to scoop in and get on the subscapularis from the lateral border versus like the vertebral side? The vertebral side obviously isn't where you're going to get in the armpit, but is that what some of your focus is to come around and get subscapularis from that lateral side, which does have you really close to the armpit?
We're going in the armpit so that you'll be face up.
We're going right in the armpit. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
You'll be face up, and I call it the deepest, sweatiest part of your armpit. That's where we're going.
And kind of dig in on that area, huh?
Well, I mean, first of all, you have to cut off your fingernails.
No acrylics, no faux acrylic nails coming.
And it's no, you know, you don't want to poke around and dig around, because I say, act like you know what you're doing. Just go right in, go straight in, and just hold it. You don't have to move around. You just press into it. And what it really does is it brings awareness to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, when the body, because there's no awareness there usually. And when the body recognizes, oh, wow, I didn't even know that was there. I didn't even know it was tight. I didn't know it was there.
Yeah.
Then it sort of heals itself. It's like, oh, that was too tight. Why am I holding that tight? And then it just relaxes. So you can just press, you know, firmly, confidently press into the armpit. And it's an amazing release, actually.
And in relation to the heart meridian, so you're finding that, do you see, like, after you've worked with 1,000 to 10,000 different armpits, and is there, like, when we think of the heart, we usually think of love. So, like, it can trigger, or like an emotional release in relation to feeling an increase of love, or can it work in the kind of counter effect where if I'm not letting love in my life, that then I might have some sort of sad response, but then ultimately that would lead toward a opening of feeling more love? Is that pretty much it?
Well, sad, you got to remember, it's complicated. This is not a linear science. Also, any release could come out as sadness, because crying, sadness is letting go. So it could have been anger, and then you cry. and now the anger is gone.
Yeah.
It point. Could have been that you lost someone, like grief, and then you cry. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The crying can be.
Yeah.
So, but in as far as the heart, I think in my experience, it'll have to do with relationships and deep, close, intimate relationships and the pain associated with those. What, you know, where you really were in love and opened your heart to someone, and then it's not going the way it was supposed to go, yes. You know, because you open, it's like you allowed something really deep in, and then it hurt. Mm. It could be heartbreak or loneliness I think. And, you know, that's pretty common.
Yeah.
Most people have
right.
a little bit of that.
At least a little bit.
Yeah.
Another element that I came across in your book that really got me thinking is the principle of asymmetry in relation to the outer body and the inner body. It got me thinking like I have a right side and a left side, and my right hand and my left hand look pretty symmetrical to each other. But then when I go into my internal organs, you know, the kidneys over here, the spleen's over there, and so there's this asymmetry. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I think that explains the struggle that we feel sometimes when, if you meditate and you're sitting there and you're like, why do I feel like I'm so crooked? You know?
Yeah.
And then if you look in the mirror, you don't really look that crooked, but inside, because we're not symmetrical. I mean, all the organs are asymmetrical by design. And so, and you know, the digestive tract is a giant tube of muscle. So it's a muscle can pull on your spine, you know? I mean, I don't know the specific way in which it would pull. I guess it depends on your body or what, you know, that your what you're eating and stuff like that. But the digestive tract can create some tension inside, some spiraling type tension. And then the liver, you know, that all of these, the liver is very heavy, or especially when it has a lot of blood in it, and it's attached by ligaments, you know, asymmetrically from the inside to the spine and to the abdominal wall. And so there's like this internal struggle that is unconscious. But we can sort of tell. We can sort of tell, like, I feel twisted, you know?
Yeah.
Like, what's wrong with me? People always say, like, I think it's because I sit weird at my desk. I'm like, maybe, but also maybe not.
There's an internal struggle going on that we have no control over.
Yeah. We don't. I mean, we do ultimately, because that's why diet is so important.
Yeah.
You know, eat a clean diet, drink enough water, don't drink alcohol, don't drink a massive amount of caffeine just to get through the day, you know, because it's going to affect, but also the emotions and the sympathetic nervous system or the autonomic nervous system is affecting the functioning of the organs. And so that a lot of it is also our thoughts, which we can control to some extent.
Yeah.
With practice.
Good point.
And that is creating these twisting from the inside. It's real.
It's so interesting. I love thinking about that. Yes.
It is.
Dr. Rose Aaron, I know we scheduled for an hour, and I'm so appreciative of you to just take time out of your schedule to speak with me. But I feel like it's gone by so fast. I'm like, how did that just happen? And I just started getting going here. Like, so, but I don't want to hold, I know you're busy and I know you have appointments and things going on today. Is there a chance in the future we could do this again?
Sure. I would love to. It's really an honor. I really appreciate your questions. They're really interesting.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. Is there, Is there something to close with? Can you leave us with any advice and or inspiration or insights beyond what you have, beyond what you have already shared with us? I'm content. I'm content. You don't have to go there. Yeah. But is there anything that comes to mind that you'd like to help close our session with?
I just say, you know, look within, because I know that's cliche, but look within, and we're our own doctors. You can go to a doctor and they can, and sometimes it really helps and it's necessary. But also, for first of all, sit still. Just go look inside, and you'll find out exactly what it is that's bothering you, and it'll resolve itself just by awareness. And have faith, you know, have faith in that we're here for a purpose, and that we are loved. So that's what I was going to end with.
Oh, that's perfect. I needed to hear that today. Thank you.
Good.
That was really good.
Thank you.
Man, well, thank you, Dr. Rose Aaron. I'm so excited. I was so excited about this. You know, we had scheduled before, and we had a storm coming here to Florida, and I had my podcast gear all set up, and I'm like, I got it timed perfectly. And then I got to the bridge and it was shut down. And then I had to double back around to the other bridge. And you were gracious enough. I called you as I was driving, and I was trying not to stress out. I was trying to relax, but I was like, no, I'm not going to make it. So I'm just really thankful that you were as sweet and kind and just like, hey, you didn't plan this. Like, it's not your fault. So, but thank you so much for rescheduling and taking time out of your day. And I thoroughly enjoyed this, and I love having the chance to speak with other people that are living this every day, and it just gives me a ton of inspiration. And I really hope that I can squeeze a little time out of my schedule and come and study with you. And I'd get a lot of information out of everything you're putting out is absolutely amazing. So keep going, keep going for it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And thanks for the work you're doing too.
All right. You know it. Well,
great work.
I appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Take care.
Take care. Bye. Native Yoga Toddcast is produced by myself. The theme music is dreamed up by Bryce Allen. If you like this show, let me know. If there's room for improvement, I want to hear that too. We are curious to know what you think and what you want more of. What I can improve. And if you have ideas for future guests or topics, please send us your thoughts to info@nativeyogacenter. You can find us at nativeyogacenter.com. And hey, if you did like this episode, share it with your friends, rate it and review, and join us next time.